Here's Andy Udman.
Pam, our guest today, suffered from depression, a debilitating disease. Tell me what drug she took to get better to where she is today.
Well, actually, what happened with our guest today, Nora Gadgoudis, is that she relied on eating the right foods in order to support her mood. And within her diet, she had to eat enough animal fat in order to support her brain health. And this is something, of course, that goes against all of what our dietary dictocrats are telling us to do. Our dietary dictocrats are telling us to reduce our consumption of animal fat, when indeed it's the animal fat that is very crucial to support our nervous system.
And the very first major change that we, you know, that we really faced was the development of agriculture. And that was sort of, I think, the beginning of a tremendous decline in human health and in our brain capacity, and in, you know, we started seeing more birth defects, we became shorter in stature, we started developing dental malocclusion and skeletal abnormalities, and we started living less long.
If you can't believe what you've just heard, believe me, we'd be happy to explain. Andy Udman, along with Pam Killeen this morning. And Pam, I just burst out laughing when I saw the front page of the Free Press this morning, and I thought, you planted this, because this is exactly what we're talking about, what we eat and how we've got it totally, totally wrong. Front page, folks, let's keep this really simple. Front page of today's London Free Press, a picture, it's even in color, of carrots, of green grapes, of red grapes, of oranges, and apples, and bananas. And the wonderful news, according to this article, is that we're eating less meat and more fruits and vegetables. Let me quote a figure. In 1982, meat accounted for 27% of our food spending at stores. That's down to 18. We're getting rid of meat. If that's good news, Pam Killeen, why are we sicker, fatter, and more depressed than we've ever been?
Because there's a lot of very critical nutrients in meat, and these are nutrients that basically make us who we are. We were hunter gatherers. We ate a fair amount of meat. We didn't have meat phobia, and as we ate more meat in our diet, more animal foods in general, this is how we evolved. This is how our brains developed.
I always love when you bring on a guest who has walked through the valley before they climb the mountain. They've walked through a personal crisis which almost killed them. So desperate for a solution to their problem, their health problems, that they did the research on their own. Would you introduce Nora?
Oh, it's a pleasure to have Nora Gadgoudis on the phone this morning. She's in Oregon, and she is the author of Primal Body, Primal Mind. Good morning, Nora.
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Nora,
how's it going, eh, up in the great white north?
Hey!
Fellow Canadians.
I love Rich Little's description of Canada. He says, I'd love to go to Canada. Up there they say, hey, I got a flat tire. I guess that means I'll have to phone the AA, eh? I'm glad to know that you know about the idiosyncrasies of our language. Nora, before we get into the heavy stuff.
Yes.
Let's talk about your journey and how low it got before you started looking for a solution.
Well, you know, it's been obviously a very long journey. I suffered from clinical depression for about 35 years of my life prior to, and sought help. Actually, by the time I was 13, I already knew I was in trouble and needed help somehow. And, you know, back in those days, depression was largely seen as a psychological disorder. So, you know, if you feel depressed, you're supposed to sit down and talk to somebody about your problems, and that's going to make you feel better, and then you move on from there. And I am a passionate proponent of psychotherapy. I think I got things from that I might not have gotten any other way. And it certainly improved my relationship with myself and other people in the world. Over many years of what I think of is pretty high-quality psychotherapy. But it really wasn't able to touch what was a physiological underpinning of depression for me. And I became interested in nutrition early on, but I was led down this labyrinth, as anybody would be who develops an interest in this subject, because there are so many interests vying for your attention. And, you know, vegetarianism and veganism tend to press upon you pretty hard when you're sort of entering into that whole study, because some of those principles are consistent with what the government would like to see, you know, as you noticed, you know, less meat and more veggies and fruits and wholesome whole grains and legumes and all these things. And so I was led down quite a little convoluted rabbit hole for a great many years with that, although I did learn early on that certainly with supplements I was able to change the way I felt and the way I thought in some ways and get some results.
Nora, I can't believe the one figure that you just gave us. Clinical depression for 35 years. I cannot imagine all the various solutions that you were presented with which didn't work.
Right. Well, it was fairly hellish.
Well,
knowing the word, it really was.
Before we get to where
it was caught up a chronic dysthymia that sort of pervaded everything, and there were times where I used to liken the whole feeling of depression as swimming with ankle weights on, where I was able to sort of fight my way to the surface to get a few gulps of breath and make some headway in my life, and then I would feel that familiar tug at my ankles and sink back down again.
I just want to focus on those 35 years for just a moment. Before you take us to the promised land, let's talk about your years in the wilderness. You described it as a hellish experience, and of course, clinical depression by its very nature is hellish, but what we're going to lead to is what's going to be explosive news to our audience, and that is nutrition was the answer, not these many other things. Let's go down the list of the many other things which didn't work.
Well, the many other things that you know, I would say that I got something from almost everything I tried in terms of my own sort of evolution, if you will, internal evolution, no pun intended. But I think about the only thing I didn't get anything from other than experientially understanding what it was about was the medication route, when I finally sort of conceded that maybe medications were the answer for me. But I did a lot of years of high-quality psychotherapy. I did a lot of deep inner spiritual work, spent time at mountaintops, et cetera, you know. I did all kinds of self-help material. I studied meditation. I tried acupuncture. I tried a whole lot of things. And obviously, my early years in nutritional study taught me that there was something inherent in that could reach somehow. But it took me quite a long time to arrive at this more sort of evolutionary understanding of how my body was actually designed to begin with that opened up that whole thing and got me to a place where my liberation from depression, so to speak, was a combination, actually, of things. I something called neurofeedback, and also the dietary approach that I talk about now.
And you were
basically helped me maintain those results for, you know, more than 15 years.
And you're getting to the good part, and I want to just focus on the bad part for just a moment.
Oh yeah, I'm happy to go back and
let's,
help. Yeah.
Let's walk through some of those drugs.
Yeah.
Drugs, prescription drugs.
Yeah, I was. I had been prescribed everything from tricyclics to the sort of panoply of SSRIs that were available at the time, and I found that those didn't necessarily help me feel less depressed so much as they helped me care about the depression less. There was a flatness, I think, to my functioning. I wasn't experiencing the low lows, but I wasn't exactly experiencing the high highs either. And when you look at what the Freedom of Information Act has revealed about the studies that were used to approve the SSRIs as the gold standard in treating depression, you find that, in fact, they found them to be not much more effective than placebo, only about 13% effective. And of that 13%, roughly 40% of individuals find that even though they experience some initial improvement, that this plateaus or falls off over time. And, the research nowadays is going so far away from the neurotransmitter model, and yet that's still considered the gold standard in the approach for treating depressive disorders. And that's not where Certainly not where the research is going in that arena.
Nora, we have to take
money's still going, so that's where the focus still is with respect to what gets prescribed.
We have to take a short break, Nora, but I want Pam to describe to you what is on the front page of our Free Press today, because I know it will make you smile.
Oh, yeah.
Right, okay. You want me to talk about it now?
Very briefly.
There's this wonderful picture of all sorts of fruits and vegetables, Nora, and we have
presumably fruits and vegetables that probably didn't exist for about a...
That's right.
2.5 million years, right?
Yeah. After the break, I want to talk about the food changes that happened at the invention of agriculture, because 12,500 years ago, during the last ice age, of course, we didn't have greenhouses, did we?
I would think not.
Nora, one piece of advice. I have a lot of friends on the farm, okay? And I know that the next few minutes is going to be a really rough ride for them. Any suggestions? Should they sit down? Should they maybe have...
They may want to fasten their seatbelt a little bit.
Yeah. Okay, get ready, all my farming friends. Get ready, because what Nora is about to say, you may not like. We'll be back with Nora in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
Pam, our guest today, suffered from depression, a debilitating disease. Tell me what drug she took to get better to where she is today.
Well, actually, what happened with our guest today, Nora Gadgoudis, is that she relied on eating the right foods in order to support her mood. And within her diet, she had to eat enough animal fat in order to support her brain health. And this is something, of course, that goes against all of what our dietary dictocrats are telling us to do. Our dietary dictocrats are telling us to reduce our consumption of animal fat, when indeed it's the animal fat that is very crucial to support our nervous system.
Curing depression through food, not drugs. Nora Gadgoudis is the author of Primal Body, Primal Mind. Nora, can you explain the title of your book?
Yes. First off, I want to commend Pam Kylene for pronouncing my name exactly right. That's a rarity. So kudos to you.
We practiced during the commercials, by the way.
Did you practice?
Yes.
It shows. It really does. So Primal Body, Primal Mind, and of course the subtitle is actually Beyond the Paleo Diet for Total Health and a Longer Life. And what the title implies is that we were basically sort of shaped and molded over 2.6 million years, to be a little more exact, as evolving hominids, that by certain conditions, by certain foods that were available to us for most of our evolutionary history, and those basically shaped and molded our physiological makeup, and it makes sense that what was available to us as food during the course of our evolutionary history would have been what shaped our physiological makeup and also what established our nutritional requirements. What is clear from most of the available studies today and some newer ones that using more sophisticated technology, it is that what is very clear is that we are all, regardless of our background or ethnicity and everything else, we are all genetically at foundation hunter-gatherers, and for a good part of that history, we've been mostly hunters. And so, you know, the idea that something that we've been consuming as a species for 2.5 million years of our lives, or of our history, the idea that suddenly is becoming the big no-no, that has suddenly now started causing disease and causing problems for us, is just patently absurd. There's no evidence whatever to support that, but there is a lot of political and economic incentive to support that.
So you're saying that our food guide is a diet that's diametrically opposed to our ancestral diet, which we know kept us healthy for millennia.
Well, yes, it's not diametrically opposed to political and economic interests, which is what it's actually designed to promote. The so-called food pyramid, or now it's, of course, been squashed into a plate, which I call it a frisbee. You know, our ancestors never needed a food pyramid. There wasn't this big question of what's healthy to eat, what isn't. We ate what was available to us, and largely what was available to us and what we sought out and ate plentifully were animal-source foods. And as was climatically and seasonally available, we, of course, made use of some plant foods, too. I don't mean to suggest that we shouldn't be eating plant foods. In fact, I actually think, to some degree, that we may have a greater need for certainly fibrous vegetables and greens than we ever did during an earlier part of our history, just by virtue of the toxic environment to which we're being exposed today, which is, you know, we have selective pressures today that we're facing as a species that our primitive ancestors couldn't have even begun to imagine. Now we have depleted soils. We have pesticides. We have all kinds of odd inclusions in our diet that were never present before, we have, of course, the pollutants and contaminants and heavy metal toxicities, and now we have genetically modified organisms. Don't even get me started there. Processed foods. We've got 24-hour daylight in the form of electricity and 24/7 stress. And even the meat that we're eating, that a lot of people are being encouraged to eat is, you know, made sort of like feedlot meats, you know, hormones and antibiotic laced meat products, which I don't in any way, shape, or form advocate. I think the animals that we consume were designed to eat what was natural to them and live out in fresh air and sunshine.
Nora, can we play a little peekaboo radio just to give people a hint of what's coming up in the next half hour?
Sure.
In less than 30 seconds, and you just are starting to get into it, what is the problem that we have today?
Right.
And what is the solution? 30 seconds on each. First, the problem today.
Well, the problems I've just been outlining, you know, and we have basically industry controlling our food supply, and this is actually having a cataclysmic effect. We have actually industry, corporate interests controlling quite literally everything. Governments don't control everything; corporations do, and those corporate interests have one objective in mind and one objective alone, and that's profit. Not quality, not health, not support of health and well-being in any way, shape, or form. But the bottom line is the bottom line for them is profit.
You've heard of Monsanto? Monsanto?
Well, of course, you know, yeah. I mean, the devil comes in many guises. I mean, obviously, monoculture, agriculture, and big agribusiness are one head of this monster. But we also have the pharmaceutical cartels. We have the food industry in its many, forms and guises. And a person can go on and on. Certainly,
but you have to give us...
influences a lot of these as well.
Nora, you have to give us a ray of hope before we take the break at the bottom of the hour here. What's the ray of hope in all of this?
The ray of hope is that yes, even though it's a little tough to come across woolly mammoth burgers anymore, that there are principles that we can apply to the manner in which we evolved to today's food supply. And it's a fairly simple matter of applying these sort of Paleolithic principles, if you will, in a way that can better optimize our health today. And by simply eating according to some of these principles and avoiding the things that we were never designed to consume, that there's a tremendous amount that you can do to support your most optimal mental and physical health.
Okay,
and in a nutshell, what my book is about.
I got a three-second question for you.
Okay.
Is Kraft food food?
Kraft dinner. Kraft dinner. KD, they call it now.
Well, they would say it is.
Is it?
It may be edible, but there's going to be a tremendous trade-off in terms of the consequences on your health and well-being.
The book is called...
The choices that we make.
The book is called Primal Body, Primal Mind. We'll be back with the author, Nora Gedgaudas, in just a moment after the news break, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
You know, we have, of course, the pollutants and contaminants and heavy metal toxicities, and now we have genetically modified organisms. Don't even get me started there. Processed foods. We've got 24-hour daylight in the form of electricity and 24/7 stress. And even the meat that we're eating, that a lot of people are being encouraged to eat is, made... sort of like feedlot meats, hormones and antibiotic laced meat products, which I don't in any way, shape, or form advocate. I think
Andy Udman along with Pam Colleen. Pam, it just struck me, that particular clip. Here we are, a society which has put man on the moon. We all have a cell phone. We can call anybody in the world anytime, and we can see their picture as we talk to them, and we're so darn smart and sophisticated. And yet, as you like to remind us, we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever before, which is why we're talking to the author of the book, Primal Body, A Primal Mind, Nora Gedgaudas. She has some great lines in the book.
Oh, my favorite line from you, Nora, is, if a caveman wouldn't recognize it, don't eat it.
Right. If it wouldn't look like food to somebody wandering around with a loincloth and a spear.
What do you mean by that, Nora?
Well, you know, basically, we've created a lot of... we've created, obviously, an awful lot of artificial foods that are certainly profitable to certain industries that were not necessarily based on anything that we were designed to eat. And even grains and legumes, which we think, a lot of people think of as very wholesome, and gosh, haven't we been eating those a very long time? Well, no. We've been eating those about 10,000 years. And when you look at the span of our evolution over 2.5 million years, that's a heartbeat in our evolutionary history. And in fact, we've only been consuming grains for maybe 0.4%. And even then, even when we first introduced them, they were a part of the equation. They weren't designed to be the whole thing. You know, we were still trying to eat as many animal source foods as were available to us. But it began leading to skeletal abnormalities, birth defects, a shortened lifespan, a smaller brain capacity, and you can look if you're an experienced archaeologist or paleontologist, whatever. You can look at the bones of human remains and be able to tell whether this was a pre-agricultural or post-agricultural skeleton based on the bone density and the presence of things like or the lack of bone density in post-agricultural remains, and also defects.
Nora, I'm going to jump in here because I can just sense our audience with a frustration right now. They're saying, Nora, you're driving me crazy. What's this obsession with what they ate centuries ago? I want to know what I should eat for lunch today.
I see. Well, yes. Basically, the principles are fairly simple. One thing that we did not consume, you know, we weren't eating grains and legumes. We weren't eating potatoes. We weren't eating rice. We weren't eating a lot of those things. What we were eating, as a matter of fact, you know, we weren't eating sugar or starch very much at all through most of our history. What we were eating was a fair amount, and actually some of the research suggests that we might have even been higher-level carnivores than foxes or wolves, we were eating a fair amount of animal source foods from whatever source we could get them from. We ate the fat that accompanied that and, in fact, coveted that quite a bit. And then in addition to that, we consumed, depending on the climate, depending on the season, we consumed plant foods as we had to or as were available to us. But we're talking mostly above-ground, fibrous vegetables. And fruit is something that we would have consumed very, very little. It would have been seasonal. And I don't know if your listeners know the difference between wild fruit and cultivated fruit. The orchards that we get our fruit from today didn't exist back then. And if you go into the woods and you look at the fruit that is available out in the woods, which is kind of, you know, where we would have gotten, that would have been our grocery store once upon a time. Wild fruits are much smaller, a lot more fibrous, have a lot less sugar content to them, and they would have, again, been only available seasonally. So we're not really designed to eat an awful lot of fruit. And most of what fruit is bred for today is its size and its sweetness, not its nutritional content.
So, let me jump in. The word agriculture, that was the part of your videos that I've been watching this morning that most rocked me. You keep talking about the way we used to eat and how we didn't have a lot of the health issues that we have today.
Right.
How did agriculture change that and get us into the horrible mess we're in today?
Well, we developed agriculture either because we over, you know, there was a die-off, a mass die-off of megafauna, the large animals that we hunted through good part of our history. at the end of the last ice age. And or because, and I think that there's actually a very good case for this, because we tried grains, and grains contain opiate-like substances that we readily become addicted to. And I think that we may very well have become addicted to grains. They certainly were much harder. It's a much more inferior form of protein and nourishment for us. And it's very, very difficult to procure. You've got to spend hours and hours every day doing backbreaking labor in the fields. You know, in the days we were hunter-gatherers, you know, you go out and they say the average work day was maybe about 3 hours. You hunt, you gather, and you're done. With farming, it requires, you know, no longer, of course, you have to kind of sit still. You don't wander around anymore. And you work very, very hard from sunup to sundown to cultivate these foods that are not anywhere near as nutritionally dense and were certainly not particularly designed to make optimal use of. And we, I think, developed a dependence on agriculture that has ultimately led to a decline in health. And we've only been consuming these foods for about 0.4% of our evolutionary history, and yet we've genetically changed maybe 0.005% since the time we developed agriculture. So we're not genetically designed to make the best use of these foods. And yet, you know, if you look at the USDA food pyramid, U.S. Department of Agriculture's pyramid, this is supposed to be the base of the pyramid. This is where we're supposed to be consuming, this is what we're supposed to be consuming the most of.
Now, Nora, plant-based foods are easier to produce, easier to ship, have better shelf life, and they're more profitable than animal foods. So this is why I see this shift going on in our diets, is that animal foods are essentially more difficult to produce and ship, and they're not as profitable.
Look, carbohydrate-based diets are something that we were never designed to consume. It has led to most of the modern diseases, virtually all of them. And however, they are the most profitable way for us to eat for industry.
That's explosive, what you just...
There are a lot of corporate interests that are very heavily invested in seeing to it that we are dependent on carbohydrates for our primary source of food.
That's explosive, what you just said. Can you just repeat that? Because I think it's at the heart of your whole message.
Well, it is. There is a tremendous amount of financial interest in keeping us dependent on carbohydrates, as our, you know, in other words, sugar and starch, is our primary source of fuel, and it is not the manner in which we were designed. We were designed to be fat burners, not sugar burners. And sugar is like a kindling type of fuel. It's not a long-burning fuel. So what do you have to do in order to maintain? Okay, so look at the animals that are actually kind of designed to eat a carbohydrate-based diet, although this is really interesting because they actually get most of their calories from fat, but I'll get to that. But the animals that are actually physiologically designed to eat carbohydrates, to get their food, to get their nourishment from carbohydrates, well, most of them have four stomachs. They have a bacterially based digestion. And what are they doing all day long? They've got their face on the ground, in the bushes, whatever. They have to eat constantly in order to meet their nutrient requirements, in order to meet their protein requirements, in order to meet their energy requirements. There's never a time when they're not eating. And now, who do you think profits from that way of eating? With us, if we're doing the same thing. If we're eating a carbohydrate-based diet, and by the way, what happens with a cow or sheep or goat is that the bacteria in their gut actually do the digesting. We have a hydrochloric acid-based digestion. They have a bacterially-based digestion. And what the bacteria do is they break down those fibers and sugars into butyric acid, which is a saturated fat. Cows, sheep, goats, etc. actually get about 70% of their calories from saturated fat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But they have to eat all day long in order to, you know, meet the nutrient requirements and make that happen.
Nora, I have to jump in because we have just one segment left and the time is ticking away. And I want to make it entirely focused where we are today and what we need to do. Because I think some of the message that people may be getting is we all need to go back to being cavemen and look, and that's the healthiest for our diet. We live in a, in a world with billions of people, what are the solutions for today? I want to ask you that when we come back in just a moment. Right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. Pam, I can hear our listeners screaming, okay, enough about the history, enough about the past, enough about cavemen. What does Nora want us to eat today? Does she want us to do a Martha Stewart? Nora, what are you going to have for lunch today?
Well, I encourage people to seek out and get their protein from a variety of very high-quality sources. Get your meat from grass-fed animals that have been raised humanely, and beef, poultry, and that sort of a thing, and, fish and a variety of fish and shellfish, pastured eggs as opposed to sort of the battery-farmed eggs. And I actually advocate moderating your protein intake. This isn't about eating slabs and slabs and slabs of meat, but eating as much fat as you need to in order to satisfy your appetite, and then eating as many fibrous vegetables and greens, not grains, but greens, as you want to for the added bulk and also for the antioxidant and phytonutrient value. But making a point of avoiding things like sugar and starch. You know, we're not designed to eat the grains. There's nobody wandering the planet today that has a grain or legume deficiency.
So, Nora, what is...
There are an awful lot of people suffering autoimmune diseases and a lot of health problems as a result of these post-agricultural foods to which we were never designed.
What is a typical breakfast for you, Nora, in the morning?
Well, a typical breakfast might be something like, like maybe leftovers from dinner. the night before, or maybe a duck egg or something cooked in some ghee. I have a casein sensitivity. I'm not able to do dairy. And dairy is actually a pretty new food for a lot of us, too. But I digress. Lunch might consist of, mixed vegetable salad with a small amount, maybe 3 ounces or something of meat or fish. On that, with just a little olive oil and a dash or two of balsamic vinegar, or apple cider vinegar, whatever I happen to have handy. Dinner might be a small piece of meat or fish that is, broiled or sautéed, I might have, sautéed mushrooms and onions on that or something like that with a pile of steamed vegetables. Some of my foods I eat raw, including animal foods. Some of my vegetables I eat raw. Some of them I eat cooked. And I try not to overcook the protein. And, of course, I try not to way overcook the vegetables. But there are advantages and disadvantages to both types of foods, to raw and to cooked.
Okay, before you get into that,
including some fermented cultured vegetables, which I think have a lot of really beneficial properties.
Mm-hmm. Nora, tell us why we so badly need to change what we're eating. Pam likes to say we are sicker, more sick. We're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than we have ever been. We're pretty
well, you
sick.
You just answered my question.
but Nora,
every biochemical process in our bodies and in our brains are dependent on the nutrients with which we supply them, and all of it is dependent on that.
But Nora, you have a lot of support, don't you now? Growing support among therapists and psychologists who are saying, let's marry these two fields together, the nutritional field
yes.
with...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is becoming a tremendous tremendous interest nowadays. And I'm actually rather amazed at the degree to which I receive emails from physicians. And I receive visits even from cardiologists and neurologists and medical researchers who say, my God, you are so right on. I really expected to get a lot of, email that was going to challenge what I was presenting, because obviously a lot of what I'm presenting is contradictory to what the media and mainstream sort of pundits would have us believe as the way to go.
Like what?
What do you mean?
Your advice to eat more animal fat versus less.
That the avoidance of modern day foods, the avoidance of grains and legumes, the consumption of animal source foods, particularly of course from humanely raised grass fed sources, and in particular the consumption of naturally occurring dietary fat.
Nora, we are almost out of time. I have to cover two quick questions, if I could. Your reaction to our obsession with high cholesterol and our obsession with low-fat diets.
Well, you know, cholesterol is one of those things that really never should have been indicted in the whole heart disease, you know, arena. And, you know, there was a Hunt 2 study in a Norwegian meta-analysis study that was published a couple of, actually just relatively recently in the last few months, that actually showed that when you look at the, when you really look at the data, and you objectively look at this data, that what it actually shows us is that that cholesterol, in fact, may actually even show a protective effect. The thing is that cholesterol is not our enemy. Every cell in your body has a means of manufacturing its own supply. It's actually an antioxidant.
We have,
people don't realize,
Nora,
that.
We have to jump in because we have just 1 minute left. We want to thank you so much for joining us. The book is called Primal Body, Primal Mind. Do you have a website?
Yes, primalbody-primalmind.com.
Wonderful.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Sign up for the newsletter. There's a lot there that's free. There are podcasts that I have from a radio show I once did that are all free for people to listen to. And I really encourage people to go there and you know, do some digging. There's a lot of great information.
Nora, thank you so
Thanks,
much.
Thanks, Nora.
Give us her message in 20 seconds.
I think we just need to eat the foods that our ancestors ate. We have to return to those old-fashioned foods because we know those old-fashioned foods kept us healthy. We're 100 times more likely to be depressed today than we were 100 years ago. And just look at how we have displaced these ancestral foods from our diet. We need to return to these very nutrient-dense foods.
Less sugar, less starch, more fat.
More animal fat in the diet,
more
absolutely.
Pam Killeen, anything else?
I have a class coming up at Central Library on Saturday. It's Simple Solutions for Bad Digestion. It's from 1 to 5 p.m., and my website is pamkillen.com.
11 o'clock news up.